welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Pulp Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to a special live edition of the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante from Keystone Sports, obviously, and our very, very special co-host, Mr. Rogers Alexander. Rogers, how we doing, bud?
Doing well.
I'll tell you what, I want to start with this. Rogers and I had a little discussion last week prior to the show, kind of discussed a little bit what we would be doing for the show, and we just learned that we're both very old guys, didn't we?
Yes.
We realized it's been over 40 years since each one of us arrived here at Penn State. So, unfortunately, I didn't arrive, though, as a collegiate athlete. You did. First of all, let's start with that. How'd you end up at Penn State?
You know, it's a very interesting and unique story how I ended up at Penn State, because it wasn't because of me and my athletic ability. It was because of Steve Smith. Some of you are...
He was a fullback.
He was a fullback. Not Steve Smith, the wrestler. Unfortunately, he just passed away recently last year. But Steve Smith, fullback. He and I went to the same high school, the Matha Catholic High School. At the time, Joe had to be talked into recruiting two high school players at the same high school on the same year. In other words, Joe had a rule. He would recruit kids from the same high school, but they couldn't be coming out the same year. Because he thought, if one doesn't come, the other one won't come. And it's double jeopardy. So he had to be talked into at the last minute, actually recruiting me. It was an accident that I got recruited by Penn State, because the coaches were down there looking at our films and buttoning up, as they called it, the films where they were watching Steve. But back then, of course, it wasn't on video, because this is before the internet. So you're watching films, and our offense and defensive films were on the same reel. So as Coach Rosenberg, who was our defensive back coach, was the person assigned to our school, as he's watching the films, he tells my position coach at the time, who was Bill McGregor, who's now been the head coach at the Matha for a while, hey, there's something wrong with your film. We keep seeing the same blitz and tackle on the quarterback, and then the quarterback's out of the game. Like, it happens like three times in a row. Somebody messed up the film. And my coach goes, go back and look at the players that are in and look at the quarterback. And he's like, my coach says that he kind of looked at Mr. McGregor like, what are you talking about? But Coach Rosenberg went back and looked, and it was three separate quarterbacks that I knocked out of the game on the same blitz during the game. That's how I got recruited. They had a linebacker that they had recruited that they wanted to come to Penn State that chose another place. So they had an extra scholarship. They actually had two extra scholarships. That other extra scholarship went to a guy from Frewsburg, New York. Anybody know who that might be? That's right. Shane Conley. Never saw tape on Shane for football. Tom Bradley went and watched him in a basketball game. And that's how he got recruited and signed with Penn State. But, yeah, you know, me being here was, I don't know, fate, I guess. I picked up the phone and called North Carolina and was going to go there because I had a double ride for baseball and football. I was better at baseball, always. But I decided, because my dad would have to drive 6 hours, and instead he'd only have to drive 3.5 or 4 to here and turn around and go back home, that I'd go to Penn State, because was I going to end up living in North Carolina, or would I rather live somewhere close to where I grew up in D.C.? So I chose Penn State, and it was the best decision, one of the best decisions I ever made. The best one definitely was not up to me. It was my high school, junior high counselor and DeMatha. And the way we were schooled at DeMatha and their, you know, the fathers there were really tough. And I came from a military family background, so it was consistent for me, that kind of support and stable upbringing. But yeah, that's how I ended up at Penn State.
So fate and Steve Smith got you here.
Yes.
Now, this was a completely different world. I'm not sure if the folks remember, you got here in 82.
Yes, that is the first year that freshmen were allowed to play. Joe was not happy about that. The very first week of practice, the very first day, Ken Kelly, our captain, separated his shoulder on the very first drill, on the very first day, in the first morning practice. In the second morning practice, Jeff Hochberg, our trainer's son, blows out his knee. So in one day, I went from fifth or 16 to second or third floating in there somehow by and not even being in any defensive plays at all. And then, of course, everyone knows how stringent and Joe was about taking care of your academic responsibilities, going to class, going to your tests, not skipping school, not being late for class. Well, our third string linebacker failed a final in summer class, and Joe sent him home. So after 2 days, I went from 15 to being second team and brand new. And Joe didn't have sort of any choice at that point because there were other depth issues at the inside linebacker and the weak side inside linebacker that, yeah, I had to be, you know, the outside linebacker. And then, of course, we play University of Maryland first game. They're ranked number one in the country. And I don't know, I think maybe Joe planned this because I'm from 3 miles down the street from University of Maryland. So after the very first, Ken Kelly got taped up and they sent him in the game because Joe did not want to start freshman. So they sent him in the game. He went in and played one play, and then I got sent in the second play and played and played the rest of the game with another player who came in and spelled me. But yeah, it's ironic how those kinds of things like work. And the only reason really why I played as opposed to someone like Shane or some of the other kids was at DeMatha, we played Maryland's wide tackle six defense, all their calls, all their adjustments, everything. So I was used to all those kinds of college things already. So that put me ahead of a lot of the kids in practice. And then, of course, I think there were only four of us out of the 34 that did not redshirt. So that was the very first class that redshirted. And of course, now that's sort of, I mean, it happens. Yeah. But at that point, Joe kind of figured out after that first class got redshirted, and then the class behind it got redshirted, that's how you started to stack the talent. So that's the reason why, you know, from my class to 5 years down the road, we played for three national titles and won two. It's because we had guys like Blair Thomas, who was getting beat up running a scout team as a freshman, and, you know, things like that. Or, you know, Kurt Warner being a senior, Todd Blackledge being a senior, my freshman year, that class, you know, that class benefited from my classmates of 34, which were guys like Bobby White, Bobby Anko, Donnie Graham, Shane Conlon, Massimo Manca, Dean DiMidio. Now, Dean DiMidio, Mike Zordich, Lance Hamilton, and I played that freshman year. We were the freshmen that played and lettered. Now there are very, very few, if not any, in the last 10 years, 4-year lettering. Because if the guy's lettering at Penn State at a school like this, more than likely he's not here for 4 years in a row. And if he is, there's so much talent that he's not going to letter.
He's going to be bypassed.
He's going to be bypassed. So it's one of those things where, like, I'm a unicorn in a lot of ways because I wasn't expected to do anything, really. You know, I was like an insurance policy, I would say, probably more than likely, because I was a military kid. So Joe didn't think that I was going to be as crazy as I was when I was here. And the fact that I was coming from DeMatha, and the fact that there were a whole lot more of us now we've seen over the past 20 years. Unfortunately, one of my DeMatha brothers is injured right now. Another one does still start. So we've got two right now, but we have an ongoing battle with Magruder now on which school is going to have the most. So I always, when I can find Devon Ellis, I always tell Bonnie, I'm like, we're going to get ahead of you again next year. And of course, we've got one coming, I think it's a safety, in the 2025 class that's coming from DeMatha.
So do you tell them all, come here as a freshman, you'll end up playing and you win a national championship like you did?
No. When I talk to recruits, I talk to parents first. And what I tell parents, especially parents from DeMatha, is that your son is here, so your son has an uncle here already. I said, here's my number. I said, when your son is here, he has a way to call somebody, and I will come get him, pick him up, take him wherever he needs to go. If he needs help with, you know, laundry, things like that, blah, 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 all those kinds of things where, you know, your parents, or, hey, how do I get home? I want to get home for break, but nobody's going that way, this, that, and the other. You know, just having kids make the adjustment of, okay, there's a ride board, and there's certain kids that I know from other areas where their parents went to school with me in our little conference, and those parents are coming up to pick kids up, this, that, and the other. So it's more important to me that those parents, those DeMatha parents, know that their kid has someone there that's not, doesn't worry about what they're doing on the football field. I also am one of the monitors at study hall for the student athletes. So I'm the one that picks up the phone because I can, because I'm a part-time employee, and go, it's funny, I've been seeing your son's backpack behind my desk for about 3 weeks. How's he doing in school? Or I see him at a tailgate, tap him on the shoulder. Yeah, how's that? Has he talked to you about his algebra test? You know, those kinds of things. I think it's extremely more important for a football player, a former captain, and a former national champion to talk to our student athletes about being a student first. The kids now are 10 times faster, 10 times bigger. I mean, they're specialized. You know, I mean, you see some kids that are doing all three. They're doing basketball, baseball, and football. But that's a rarity now. Now you have kids that, you know, they're doing travel this, travel that. They're specializing. They have a trainer. All those kinds of things. By the time they get here, that athletic side of them, that's all planned for them, and all the academic part, which kids don't understand until 20 years down the road, that's the more important part, and that's the one that can put you on the bench the quickest. Because if you don't get the grades and you don't get normal progress, coach can't play you, no matter how good you are. And that's one of the things sometimes at the high schools that gets overlooked. That, you know, teachers make allowances that they really shouldn't, thinking that they're doing the best thing for them by not holding them accountable as other students, and they really should. It's unfortunate, but that's one of those moral decisions where people are thinking they're doing the best by trying to get a kid somewhere, but they're shortcutting them in the end.
No. That has been the case for a long time, forever. You know, the athletes getting that special privileges. Now, how much your attitude towards academics and helping out these students comes from playing under Joe?
Oh, it's 100% of it. I mean, it was luck on my part, because I would have not played those first 3, 4, 5 games if one of our players would have passed his test in the summer and studied and not been sent home for the semester. So, I mean, that right there, the fact that he sent someone home, he didn't say, okay, you're not going to play, he's still on the team. He sent him home. And then had the young man had to come back and meet with Joe before he was allowed to come back to school the following year. And there were some guys that, you know, over the years didn't do what they were supposed to do academically. I'm still in touch with a couple of my teammates who were one of those guys that they didn't do what they were supposed to in school. They were starting the spring game, and then come summer practice at the beginning before you start the season, they're 15, and you don't know why. And one of the older guys says, he didn't go to class.
So you figure it out pretty quickly.
You figure it out pretty quickly. What the pecking order was family, God, school, and then the football will take care of itself.
How much of that has changed now that we've got NIL, we've got they're making money, they could transfer. Hey, if a coach today says, you're no longer on the team because you didn't go to class, I don't care, I'll just go to the next school down the road.
I mean, those kinds of things happen every day. You know, it's the NIL thing is going to be something that I think the unintended consequence of NIL will actually have a silver lining. Okay, for a lot of folks, what they don't know about the numbers is a big majority of professional athletes, when they retire, do not possess the skills to live by themselves. They've had handlers their entire time, for all the way through junior high school, high school. In some way, shape, or form, someone said, we just want you to concentrate on being great. We'll handle that for you. We'll handle this for you. We'll handle that for you. Guys end up retiring from the league. They turn around and they look over, and now there's no agent. And now all of a sudden, a guy's looking and going, okay, what's my check coming from the league? What's FICA? Or, I never realized how much insurance is on my 5 houses that I have, and how much the mortgages were, and how much money my monthly spend is, because I've never seen it. So I didn't realize that maybe I should have worked out a little longer and then started to prepare for what kind of bills I have, because I just bought another brand new house a year ago with a, you know, 20-year mortgage or a 10-year mortgage or whatever that my agent set me up with that paid, you know, more than I was supposed to for it. And I have 8 cars and none of them are paid off, or, you know, those kinds of things. So I think one of the things that's going to be nice is, as a young 18 to 21-year-old, you get to make the mistake of not paying Uncle Sam. And that hit on you while you're at a school and in NIL is going to be a couple thousand dollars, but you're going to learn taxes get paid first. not just federal taxes, but then your state taxes, things like that. So what you're saying is
one of the other unintended, perhaps good consequences of making some money now in colleges, the lessons you wouldn't learn till later, you're learning it now.
You get to fail. You get to be in jeopardy, but you have a support system because you're still in college. You're still here, right? You can go down the list. You can look it up. How many guys retire and 2 years later they're divorced and they're going to court and now half of their funds are split and then 3 or 4 years later they're bankrupt? And that's because they never had the opportunity to do what a lot of students don't realize is a blessing. When they leave, and mom and dad, especially 20, 30 years ago, you're not coming home, go get a job. You're not going to go come back here and be in the house for 10 years trying to figure out, you know, this, that, and the other. So they learn those bumps and bruises right away. Those kinds of bumps and bruises, financial awareness bumps and bruises. I mean, once or twice a year, one of my student athletes comes up to me and says, can you take me to the bank? I don't have a bank account. So we're handing kids $5,000 or $6,000 here on a regular basis, and some of them don't have a bank account.
Now, why is that not being taken care of or prepped? Why aren't there lessons you've got? So if we're talking about taking care of our student athletes, not just on the field, but we want them taken care of academically, but shouldn't some of those lessons just be part and parcel of, hey, you're a collegiate athlete now, you're going to be making money, here's some lessons on how to handle it?
It has to do with the fact that we are still in a in-between zone as far as how this NIL space is going to be looked at, how it's going to be handled. Some people think that a couple of years from now, football will be something completely separate from the rest of athletic departments. Football will be an LLC. So folks in the football arena, there'll be 50-some-odd or 60-some-odd players. They'll be Penn State's LLC, and they'll be maybe recruited out of high school, maybe recruited out of junior college or whatever, but they'll be employees. They won't be going to school. So there's the nightmare, right? So then what do you do with the walk-ons, right?
Well, they're already talking about getting rid of walk-ons, that they're going to expand the number of scholarships available and eliminate the walk-ons.
Right. Of my class of 34, well, put it this way, anyone who's been here and watched the games in the 80s, I think everyone knows that a walk-on caught our pass to win our national championship.
Greg Garrity.
The importance of walk-ons for the 5 years that I was here, it's unbelievable. Two of those walk-ons were on the board of trustees, Troy Cromwell and Dan Delegati. They were my classmates in my class of 34. If that doesn't tell you how important having walk-ons is, you know, if you're anywhere in that academic athletic department realm and you don't understand the significance of what your walk-ons are, you're probably at a school that's not really playing for anything, and especially you're at a school who doesn't graduate its student athletes at a high rate. Because you can see it through Penn State's history, all the walk-ons that made significant contributions to the university and continue to, either by being CEOs. One of the jobs that I got after I got out of the police department was from a player from Ohio, Rob Smith, who said, come up and work for me, Raj. I need some leadership up here with folks and blah, 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 and this, that, and the other. So those kinds of things, or Delegati wanting me to come work for McDonald's and getting in that. And I was like, oh, I can't do that. That's you know, 10 years of, because at McDonald's, it's that process of, you can't own a McDonald's unless you've done every single job in the McDonald's. And it, you know, in a lot of ways, you're like, well, like a lot of kids now would be like, no way. I'll go do something else. But they don't understand the value. And those are some of the things that Joe would do also, right? He would never really put guys who were really ready to play out there right away. He would make them sort of
earn
their way.
You're not getting it.
Because, I mean, there were times in practice, especially during the bowl games, where we had guys that were running us around and we were losing the practices, right? And then we'd go out in the game, and the game would be easy because the toughest game we had all week was Tuesday, not Saturday.
Against yourselves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because I'm chasing DJ Dozier around. I'm chasing Blair Thomas around.
Well, and I think people have to remember, when you playing, you started at 82. Because you didn't redshirt, your final season was 85, so you missed that second national championship in 86. But, you know, talking a little bit more about the play on the field, we talked earlier about the difference now. Guys aren't going to stick around and be four-year lettermen anyway. If you're playing, so how much different is it now? How much better prepared are these players? Like we saw, you know, a couple of years ago, two freshman young running backs came right in as freshmen in play. Is that part of the high school game being so good now that players are better prepared as freshmen than in your day, do you think?
I think it's a combination of things. It's a combination of really college now, with the fact that you're on campus all summer, every year, that you graduated 3 years.
And plus, you're now starting in January, not in the fall.
So kids are actually, if they're here after 3 years, like three and a half or four, they're doing grad school to stay on normal progress and to be a registered full-time academic student. They're having to go to grad school.
Do you even recognize today's game after playing 40 years ago when you think about, again, I think we all are so used to it now, we forget that this early entry, in fact, this year there's a player on the team who should be starting his senior year in high school. He got done with his classes early. He's already here. We have the transfer portal. We have NIL. We have a playoff. All these things must be so foreign to you when you think back on your day.
Oh, they're definitely... I mean, they're foreign to me in the fact that I didn't have to experience those things. But it's, they've avoided what was their violation of antitrust laws.
Okay. Yes.
So what people don't understand is, parents would say, you should, you know, they would tell them, you should be happy that you've got a full scholarship. But what they don't understand is other high-performing academic students, academic-only students, not academic and athletic, but academic students, got spending money, got a stipend, got their school paid for, and didn't work the number of hours that we did. You know, now there's a 25-hour rule. We had 25 hours in down at football by Wednesday. We would do Thursday, Friday, and all the travel on Saturday, and then coming in on Sunday for 7 or 8 hours. So, like, there's things that have progressed so that the kids now have more time to be to themselves and sort of experience some college. But because of the high-profile nature and the fact that before, when we were here, the internet didn't exist for a couple of years, and then when it did, there was no one running around with a handheld device that was going to videotape things all day and every day and wherever you were. So you did have that ability to also not be anonymous, but Joe on purpose had us spread out all over campus when we lived here. We weren't in
a little
bubble.
It was not a football.
We weren't in a little bubble. There wasn't a football dorm. So coaches now have to insulate because of the handheld recording device. They have to insulate their kids from the people that want to try and take advantage of, you know, because, I mean, you've got, when we were in school, we had $5,000 walking around or in their room.
But now?
But now, that's a, I mean, kids 10, 20, 30, 50,000, a million. I was looking at a top 10 report the other day. I think it's one of the kids, I think either at Colorado or another place is making, or I think it's the kid from Texas is making $14 million in NIL.
Who needs the NFL?
But what I think a lot of the places are missing, and I hope I'm wrong, but the biggest brand and the thing that everyone who's working right now, you have a brand. Whether you're like me, I was a D.C. police officer. I represented the city of D.C. That was my first brand. And then my actions outside of work would reflect positively or negatively on that brand. The one thing that seems to be missing is we keep talking to kids about their brand and not the brand that's going to pay them the longest first, and understanding the bigger brand and seeing the opportunities that exist when you think about the bigger brand first. You have kids now who are thinking about themselves and getting on things individually and making statements about things that they really don't understand yet, and this, that, and the other. And that's great because they're trying to take advantage of those opportunities. But what they don't understand is the unintended consequences are those, is that there's somebody in a corporate level that's sitting back and going, not going to be able to use him in a commercial in 5 years because this is going to come back. Because now everything's recorded and documented. So those statements that you make now take away $5, $10 million. Take away $20, $30, $40 million. When you're talking about a commercial for a national brand that pays you $10,000 to $30,000 every time that commercial runs when it's running nationally, and you don't realize that you've taken that opportunity away from yourself when you're saying some of the things that you say or getting on and doing a TikTok or this, that, and the other, and someone in a corporate decision-making level goes, yeah, take them off the list.
So how,
or take her off the list.
How do we teach the student athletes to be aware of those things? That there are the lessons there that, first of all, the majority of them will not be playing on Sundays. And the ones who do play on Sundays, that career is not going to last that long. They're going to have much longer life after that NFL career. So how do you make these young men and young women, because they're part of it too, the student athletes, how do you make them aware of that? What is the Penn State's responsibility in that?
It's a scary proposition for any coach to try and navigate. How much of the whole truth do I tell my students and they're not scared away and transfer?
That is part of it.
So rather than try and navigate that, you know, that goes off the plate. You don't venture in that realm at all.
That's unfortunate because we've taken the student away from the student now.
Right. Or you have folks that come in and say, okay, they come in and just talk to them about them being a brand and not connecting the dots on the bigger picture.
So if you have, again, you're at Penn State, I do think that we've talked about this. Penn State, we have success with honor as part of our culture, part of our brand. You hope that you get student athletes who come here who recognize that, want to be here, want to be part of it. So how do you get to the next step, though, which is you have extra responsibilities now because the exposure from internet and everything's recorded like you talked about, that because of NIL, you're going to be No, there's money that's going to be involved with it. Now, I have to recognize several of the people who are here in this group here who I know are involved in several outlets where they have the student athletes in. They introduce them to some successful Penn State people who try to do that guidance, and I think they do very well at that. But how do you do that in the bigger picture, especially with football, which there's money there that's just not in the other sports? There's a lot of things that could spoil these athletes when they see the money, and they could just run off somewhere else.
Does anyone in the audience know who our most successful, lucrative Penn State student athlete is in the NIL space?
Who is it?
I haven't kept on it, but kept up with it. But one of the biggest contracts was a female student athlete. And one of the biggest male student athlete contracts was not football.
The gymnast.
Yeah. So, but I guess.
But those are outliers.
Those are outliers. But what isn't an outlier is if we think about how we were raised and how we were incentivized, if you get straight A's, hey, we're going to go do this, or we're going to go here, or we're going to go there. Why do we stop that right now when the grades that they're getting in college are even more significant? Why aren't we changing our NIL to go, okay, let's have a competition. We're going to give a bonus to the number one GPA team, and we're going to give them a bonus to then split within their whole team, walk-ons included. Right? Because why are we allowing the university to tell us as alumni, this is how I want my money spent? Right now, I know there's a whole lot of people on campus that are going crazy right now once they hear this. But there's many of the alumni that call and say, I'm not giving anymore until they go back to us not being mentioned when I'm at a barbecue as being a football factory. Yes, that's where guys graduate, and it's grades first there. Grades first. Because we can incentivize. What does that do? That prepares a kid for exactly what they're going to do when they go out in the work environment. Your work environment is the same thing. You are incentivized to perform. You're held accountable to that performance, or else you go somewhere else. Either not by choice sometimes. But if we don't prepare kids for the real world, if we keep them in a bubble, we are doing them a disservice.
And that is happening. But if I'm a coach with my $8 million a year contract, it's pretty much dependent on how many games I win, Rogers.
Some schools, I think, are starting to realize that they need to take a stand and not be in that football factory only realm.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I know it was different 40 years ago, but in an environment where you had Joe making sure the players were responsible, that they were accountable for going to class, doing things the right way academically, as you mentioned, there were two national championships in the span of 5 years and played for three of them. Can we still do that now?
Those weren't the only national championships on campus back then.
True, but...
So there were national championships happening in other sports that had nothing to do with the hoopla and the sort of star power associated with football. There were very successful teams all through those years.
But with those successful teams, they weren't looking at playing in a professional environment where the football players, that's the goal pretty much of all of them, right? Nobody goes into college football saying, well, I know I'll never be in the NFL. I'm sure every one of them thinks, this is going to be my profession. This is my job, playing football. So how do you work with that mentality and still get the academic responsibility and do those other things like you talk about?
I don't necessarily agree with those are the only things, because as far as sports, right? So the owner of the lacrosse league is a DeMatha graduate, Paul Braver. professional lacrosse league. Yes, 40 years ago, there was no professional women's basketball. Now there is. No professional soccer. You had to go over in Europe. Now there is. So, gymnastics now. And that's the funny part, right, is some of the gymnasts were making money and then they didn't come to school because of the way the rules were.
Well, in fact.
Right? Because they were considered a professional. So then they couldn't come back and be an amateur and get an education without having to pay for it themselves.
Well, it was Olympic sport athletes who drove a lot of what's going on now. You know, the House versus NCAA, the athlete, I don't know if he was a swimmer or a gymnast, whatever he was, but it was not like a football player or basketball player who sued. Because being an Olympic athlete, if they weren't in college, they could make money for endorsements. But by being a collegiate athlete, they couldn't compete against other non-collegiate athletes in their same sport.
Yeah, that was one of the things. But there was a basketball player that won the first suit.
Yes,
from UCLA.
UCLA.
Yeah. And of course, I find out about the fact that, you know, when I'm newly married, my nephew tells me at Thanksgiving, Uncle Raj, we play you on video. And I'm totally floored. Like, what? You do what? Oh, yeah, you're on a video game. Blah, 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 blah. Like, and you have the most power, so we play you all the time.
And so you get rich off that game, right?
How do you know it's me? Because your number and your face, like, it's there. Like, it's you. And I'm like, oh, because Penn State never had names on the back of their jerseys. But, so, of course, those games and stuff like that have been adjusted and all that kinds of stuff. But I wonder how much of a distraction would that have been if I was more worried about me being on a video game than trying to figure out me finishing my degree? And then, so, there's a nip and tug that I think, you know, kids are growing up so much faster. They have access to so much more information than we did, or some of our kids did. Because now I'm looking at some of my teammates' grandkids that are coming here, that are almost here.
Did you feel old?
Oh, I felt old for a long time.
I'll tell you what. Let's say, by the way, Ed Bingham.
Ed O'Bannon.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about things on the field. We've got a big game coming up from Penn State. I know I'm doing a big segue here, but I wanted to take the opportunity to talk to you about it. Big game coming up Saturday night. I know it's been a long time since you were on the field, but when you see a big game like this at Beaver Stadium, do you start to miss it? Do you think to yourself, boy, I wish I had another day where I could run out onto the field?
No.
You're supposed to say, oh, Jim, I miss it. It was the greatest thing. If I could just run out onto that field one more time.
No. I do wish that I had another opportunity to take a couple of different classes.
Really? There you go.
Because it took me, when I chose, you know, administration of justice and I go into law enforcement, like, I wasn't really looking at, okay, what's your ceiling? Now, granted, I'm very good friends with three different chiefs of police in the D.C. area. One was in my class, and one was at the math ed. Another one lived down the street from me when we were elementary school kids. They're all chiefs of police in the different cities and counties in D.C. But, and my dad, of course, was friends with chiefs of police when I was just leaving. But that's a very stressful paramilitary organization, and your trajectory for making significant income when you talk about DC's cost of living and things like that, even as a chief, you're making decent money, don't get me wrong, but it's not the money that I was a fly on the wall for when I was doing my bodyguard stuff in LA and all over the country, where those clients that I was a fly on the wall for,
it's a different world.
That's a different that's a different stratosphere as far as like money and realizing that those kinds of attainments of that kind of wealth are done on purpose, and they're very purposeful, thought out things that take just as much determination. There's just as much work, there's just as much focus as a high performing professional athlete in any of those sports. And then what you get to find out, especially in the pros, is, you know, everyone is so good physically, but it's from here up. It's from your neck up that's the difference between you staying as a professional athlete and having a long career and you being fly by night and sort of, okay, we're going to run you in there and wear you out, but you end up keep making the same mistakes and you don't learn from them and this, that, and the other. Okay, now your contract's not...
not renewed.
Not renewed, and guess what? Okay, you're gone, right? Now you're out, and you don't have a degree because you left early, and you didn't get it, right? So now things like, okay, the NFLPA, they will pay for your degree to, I mean, they will pay for your school to go back and finish your degree at whatever school. It doesn't have to be the same one, right? And they will... and the NFLPA. So, but that happened after two strikes, right? Those kinds of things to help everyone. But I think our alumni base are the ones that have to guide Penn State, not Penn State funnel the way they want alumni to spend their money. I mean, I hope that at some point this year that every single one of our student athletes know that we went from number one to number two. And everybody goes, what do you mean number one to number two? Yeah, we went from being the number one Fortune 500 CEO owners in the country to number two. Wait a minute. Now that's our wake-up call. We went down to two.
And our academic ranking among the Big Ten is not where it should be either.
And really, we used to, I mean, when we were independent, we didn't worry about conferences. We worried about the whole country, right? So we've lost that. We put ourselves in a smaller segment when we really looked at ourselves. We're in competition with everyone in the country.
Yes. And so what do we do about it?
It comes down to the only thing that folks start to pay attention to is this. When I would investigate a crime or investigate whatever it is, a robbery, a burglary, a homicide, it all came down to follow the money, right? It comes down to follow the money. If enough of them not go in and go, no, this is what I want. This is what I'm going to donate, and this is why I'm going to donate it and get it done. And too often, like, people who run successful businesses who are Penn Staters, they get to Penn State, and all of a sudden they turn into, like, their employees don't know who they are. What do you mean? You got talked into this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. No. You don't get talked into anything in negotiation when you're getting ready to do a merger with another company. So, like, that's the thing that is frustrating for me, because I know that the real power in this place and the real recruitment is when we start showing these kids, yeah, this person was a wrestler in 1984. He actually negotiated the Pac-12 TV contract 10 years ago, and now he's this. When we start talking about those student athletes more, we won't have to have Coach Franklin be on his text message and on his phone and all that stuff 24/7, because now we'll be elevating the brand that is always here, which is Penn State and its student athletes. And now you're talking about all the student athletes.
And that's also the Penn State alumni. I think most people sitting in this room are Penn State alums. And it's actually incumbent on all of us to share. You're doing that, you say, you know, with especially specifically the DeMatha student athlete, but I'm sure you share those things with more. So it's really the responsibility of all of us as Penn Staters to get to the student athletes when we have the opportunities.
There are mechanisms that are in place that athletics is pursuing and doing. But they're not doing them with 100% effort because they don't have the personnel nor the people nor the money to do them correctly because they've got kids running these programs. And what I mean by kids is we got people that don't understand, haven't been bosses, haven't been in charge of 100 or 200 or 800 people. So how are they going to convey to a younger person where you want to go?
Yep.
So, but that's one of those things where they're in a catch-22. They want to do something. They want to start branding. They want to get people to come in and this, that, and the other. But yet you've got so many Penn Staters that would come here and you wouldn't have to pay them because they're invested in that brand already. I always tell kids, when you go on an interview, if you've got 10 or 15 people in that interview tree, you've got a Penn Stater in that tree. That needs to be something that's said all the time because it proves itself true. There's what, over 800,000 living alumni? If you're anywhere east of the Mississippi, there's a Penn Stater in that recruiting tree. Especially if you're in a Fortune 500 company.
And I think those of us who've been out in the working world know this. As someone who wears my Penn State banner on my sleeve, people know I'm a Penn Stater as they go to different places, talk to different people, and that's prior to me doing this kind of job. You're exactly right. You are always going to run into more Penn Staters. I'll tell you what, we are getting close to running out of time. I want to give you one last opportunity. You have Penn State audience here. You have Penn Staters listening. What's your last message to them?
I know everyone is excited about the opportunity for Penn State to finally be in the playoff. And
we are.
And the fact that some things may seem a little discombobulated, sort of, as far as who's doing well, who isn't doing well, how do you judge when you have a team who doesn't really put up a good fight and it's not really their fault. They are where they are. And that's the last thing that we sort of get to evaluate on whether we're going to do well against Illinois or how well we're going to do against Big Ten teams. Hopefully, like our student athletes who come here as freshmen and make mistakes and then learn as sophomore and junior and senior, that same progression applies to our coaches. Because it seems like people don't realize how many mistakes Joe made before we got to 82. How many national titles where we ran the same play into the line three times.
Gooming over the top. Okay. Gooming over the top.
So that kind of thing. That was the very first Penn State game I had ever watched.
Is that right?
That I had ever seen. My dad didn't really want me watching a whole lot of TV on sports when I was little. But I mean, that's one of those things that, you know, now the game has changed so much and kids have so many different distractions, things that can pull them away. I mean, can you imagine if you got a kid who's got $1 million or $100,000 NIL contract and he misses something and they tell him you're not getting your $25,000 check and they tell him that on Thursday or Friday before a Saturday game?
Uh-oh.
Do you feel bad for the kid? Would you blame him if he was going to, or her, if they're going to be distracted then? Or if you get a phone call or a text or whatever, the morning of a volleyball tournament, right? Where one of the beach volleyball girls out in California says, hey, when you're done in the summer, I'd love for you to come out. I'm going to fly you out, and we're going to work out and play together because I'm trying to evaluate you down to my top 10 on being a professional volleyball player. So the distractions and the pulls are so much more significant on the kids now. They have so much more responsibility. They have eyes on them 24/7. And that's one of the things, for some reason, like I just don't feel like our alumni base gets it, that the microscope that they're under is so huge that they need our alumni support in navigating those kinds of things, setting up real, informed, principle, process things within the university and outside the university that make sense, right? Because Penn State has a mission, but I wonder how many of our higher-ups can tell me what that mission is, because their actions don't necessarily line up with what that mission is.
And, you know, I want to recognize one more time, several of the folks we have here, I do think get it, because I've been involved in some of the events. So you all know who you are. I don't want to go through all the names, but as a Penn Stater, I appreciate what you guys do. And Rogers, I really appreciate what you do for all of us and coming on the show. Thank you very much.
Quite welcome. My pleasure.
Thank you, Rogers.
Keystone Sports Network.